You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show. This is episode 956. In this show, we've got a real expert. He's helped a load of medium, large, small, all sorts of companies and entrepreneurs with their online marketing strategy. Came on my radar a couple of months ago, and I feasted on his online blog and his latest videos, and I thought he would be an excellent guest for the show, and he agreed. And that's Lars Lofgren. He's the chief growth officer at Stonepress. He's got a load of experience. It should be a really interesting show. We're going to be discussing the changing landscape of SEO, online marketing, everything to do with it. It should be a really fantastic discussion. So, Lai, would you like to give the tribe a quick 10, 20 second intro? And then when we go into the meat and potatoes of the show, I'll ask for a deeper insight of your background.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to be here. And as far as who I am, I've been doing online marketing and growth stuff for my whole career. Originally started out straight out of college. I got hired by Heaton Shaw and Neil Patel at their Kissmetrics, their original startup. Or one of their original startups. That the whole thing imploded. That's a whole story. Yeah. But I got a lot of learning opportunities from that, and I've worked with a bunch of other companies now. I have moved away from my company, Stonepress. We shut all that down. That's a whole other story.
Which we can go into.
Yeah, which I'm happy to go into. And then right now, I'm basically doing the fractional VP thing. I'm helping with content strategy, content programs, SEO, stuff like that for a few major brands.
So. That's fantastic. And I've got my patient co-host, Kurt. Kurt, would you like to introduce yourself to the new listeners and viewers?
Hey, folks. My name is Kurt Von Annen. I own an agency called Manana Nomas, and we work directly with WP Tonic and the good folks at Lifter LMS.
Like I say, it should be a fantastic discussion. And Lars has just got a tremendous amount of experience, and he's a really down-to-earth guy. But before
maybe, we'll see
you do, I've got the impression you're pretty... but before we go into the meat and potatoes of this great interview, I got a message from one of our major sponsors. We'll be back in a few moments, folks.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
We're coming back, folks. Before we go into the interview, I also like to point out we've got a great resource for the WordPress professional. Basically, it's a created list of the best WordPress plugins and technologies and services that can help you, the agency owner, the freelancer, and the power user. Plus, we've got some special great deals from the major sponsors of the show. You can get all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals, wp-tonic.com/deals. What more could you WordPress professional or power user ask for? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get on that page. I'm sorry to disappoint. I've made a career of it. You should laugh, Lies. That's not a bad one, Lider. All right, sorry. There we go. So you gave us a quick intro. Maybe you can give us a slightly more insight about your journey and how you got into the world of marketing and helping build companies up. How did you get into this world, Lars?
Yeah, that's probably I won't go into all the details, but I was in college at the time. This was when like blogging and WordPress and all that stuff, like when it was like sexy and cool. Well, I mean, it, maybe it never was that sexy, but it was like the thing, you know, like people,
it was still sexy.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. Well, it was like, at least in the online tech world, is like,
WordPress world is getting too exciting.
You should have been there in the day. But there was a period where anybody that was online and doing online marketing was like, oh, I want to have a blog, right? There's a lot of people that like nobody wants to say that anymore, at least not generally. They all want to be TikTok influencers or something. But back then, everybody wanted to blog. So I started blogging. I was like, this is cool. I like this. I like to write. No, I like to build websites. This is fantastic. Got into it, started building my own personal blogs, and tried to build a blog on like foreign policy, international affairs. That's what I got my degree in. And I was building traffic. I had like a whole group of interns working for me, like cranking out content, and I wasn't paying them anything because I've convinced the college to give them a college credit for all their work. And it was going along, and I realized, wait, my skills that I'm using building the blog are way more valuable than the actual blog. Why don't I just go try to sell these skills to other people? Especially because this was new, you know, building email lists, brand new, building websites, no one has to do it. WordPress still very, very new, like Blogger's a thing at the time. You know, Drupal was still really popular. Drupal websites are everywhere. Yeah, no one misses those days. So I was like, why don't I go just start freelancing and helping other people build their websites? And I was getting into copywriting and all this stuff. And I was like, well, I'll just charge them and I'll make way more money than I am on this rinky dink little blog that's paying me 40 cents a month on AdSense revenue. You know, like I'll make, you know, I close one client and I'll make more money. I'm a college student. So like $100 goes a long way. And I went that route and started closing clients and then used that to get my first job at Kissmetrics, and the whole thing is, you know, the rest is history basically, right?
How did you get the gig with Kissmetrics? And you know, you're very I'm going to say some nice things about you, so you want to write them down because I don't.
Well, we have the recording, so I'll just save that late every morning before I.
Because you're not too big headed. A lot of people that are in the marketing for a long time and have a bit of success and that, they can, their heads can grow a bit. Shall we put it that way? You seem very down to earth, but you pointed out when we were having our email exchange. You know, when I said you work with Dropbox and Evernote and a lot of other companies, you pointed out, you know, that you did a bit of work with them. But it's still impressive you worked with quite a few big names. How did you build up your reputation? Was it just word of mouth that you weren't a bullshitter and you got some results? Was it that?
I think that helps. Honestly, like I think there was two things that really kind of like accelerated everything and got kind of on that speed ramp to somewhere. I don't even know where I was still going. But so the first thing was getting that job at Kissmetrics was a total game changer for my career. Like it probably cut 10 years off my career right out of the gate. For a number of reasons. One, even today, even Kissmetrics is like not even a thing anymore. I think technically you can still sign up for it, but the number of people that still know about it and I can still reference it even like 15 years later is insane. And that's because for its era, Kissmetrics was a hot startup. It was in that early SaaS cohort. It was doing things innovative. Neil and Heaton were everywhere at the time. They were all over Twitter. They were all over everything. And if you were around in online marketing in that era, you ran into all three of those things, Neil, Heaton, and Kissmetrics. And then I'm like right in the center of it, right? So that getting like, even if the startup doesn't work out and I never made any money off of Kissmetrics, my shares, I don't even think I exercised my options. I was like, I know where this is going. I'm not doing this. I'm going to keep hold of that like $2,000 or whatever it was. So I never made any money off it. It was never going to IPO. It never did IPO. But the value that I got off of that early brand was crazy. Like today, if you're working at well, if you were one of the first people at OpenAI, like, just game over, right? Like, your whole career is set. Or were an early employee at Slack when it was hot. You're set, right? Like, that's, if you, even if, like, no one makes any money, if you just have that brand logo from the right time and you're one of the cool vintage startups of your era, it's a game changer.
What I think you're saying is the credos of that, even now, when you do outreach or you want to talk to somebody, they're prepared to have a chat with you.
Yeah. And it's not as, like, the Kissmetrics brand doesn't necessarily carry the weight that it used to. Like, there was a period there where I could just say, hey, I was the head of marketing at Kissmetrics, and that got me into all sorts of crazy doors. I don't lead with that anymore because it has, like, waned. But that set me up for the next thing in a big way, which set me up for the next thing. And, you know, Heaton Shaw, Neil Patel, like, Neil Patel's got his massive agency. Everybody knows Neil, right? It's crazy. So I can still do that name drop and be like, yeah, Neil Patel hired me straight out of college for his first startup. And everyone's like, whoa, wow. Okay. So, like, the brand, like, what I have to focus on to get that big punchy brand social proof, it's shifted over the years, but it helped, like, that Kissmetrics had a lot of juice in it during that era and got me to, you know, all sorts of things that now I can lean on, you know, front and center.
That's great. Over to you, Kurt.
Well, I get to mention the big name everybody seems to get fearful over, and that's Google. I'm old school too. I started working in WordPress in 2004, and I can remember working with clients back in the day where it's like, if you just focus on making some good content, you know, use decent lead-ins, decent titles, and a little social media, people are going to find you. And it's not like that now, right? Now, yep. I see beautiful websites that get zero traffic. So if we're going to talk about, or you talked about it before in an interview about how Google basically decimated SEO strategies for a lot of folks, and then you see a lot of people jumping over to Reddit or different forums to try and get some heat or some action on their brands. What are your real thoughts on this game as we move forward?
Yeah, I just want to point out the thing's moved a bit, hasn't it? You know, it's because they brought out their March update, mm-hmm. and they seem to have hit, well, various influencers that I listen to saying that niche forums have been hit. They're oscillating a bit. Surprise, surprise, isn't it, Lai, about Google? So I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's a very fluent, changing landscape, isn't it?
Yeah, I have a few clients right now, and I hate telling them, like, how I feel about anything, because I know as soon as the update comes out, it's all going to get rocked. So it's like, I don't even want to be optimistic, because, like, who knows what's coming around the corner? The world has changed. I mean, for almost my entire career, if you built a website, and you focused on quality content, and then you did, like, a little bit of link building, you could get somewhere interesting.
Yeah.
And not even, like, sketchy. Like, I'm not even talking about the hardcore affiliates, like, competitive spaces where you have to do a ton of link building or, like, actual link swaps or crazy link schemes and shit like that. Like, even just in a natural, organic way, tight content program, focus on different topics and keywords, keep it fairly clean. You don't have to be perfect, but somewhat clean and focused, and it will pay off. Like, the struggle for SEO for the longest time was, like, it always worked, but you had to get through this, like, really long, there was always this delay where you had to really go for it for, like, a good 3 years. And then things got really interesting, and it more than paid off. I believed users won, Google won, the company won, everybody was winning, everybody was benefiting, content kept getting better. And those days have really changed. That is not true anymore. If I was building out, like a startup from scratch, and they were asking me, hey, should we do, like, an ongoing blog program where we're doing, you know, 10, 20, 30 blog posts a month? You know, maybe we're doing them in-house, maybe we have a content agency, whatever. And I'm like, I'm not sure that's a good idea, honestly. Like, I might do that if I had my own, like, tech startup or SaaS startup of some kind, but only because I know this stuff and I know it really well. But I'd also be very hesitant about it from day one. I probably wouldn't go full bore like I would even like a couple years ago. And today, maybe, you know, I think like my baseline recommendation without learning anything else about a given new tech startup would be like, okay, you're in a given category and space. There's probably like a few, and by few, I mean a few, maybe informational topics. There's probably a few bottom of the funnel stuff. You know, the alternatives, the review topics, the versus topics, you know, you versus your competitors. Do that, you're probably looking at 20, 30 posts like total. Go put those on a section of your site. Spend a good amount of time on that content. Hopefully, because you're a startup, it's so small that the competition in that space is essentially zero and Google needs more content. And like, you're not going to get to the top like very quickly, even if you focus a ton on content quality and link building and all that stuff. But maybe you get somewhere in like the bottom of the first page and you get just a few visits coming in that get past all the AIO bullshit. You know, they're coming through on ChatGPT, and you get a few of those extremely high quality visitors because they've made it through all the other you know hurdles and they're landing on your site. And even though this blog post gets two visitors a month, they're still extremely valuable. In your space, like, okay, that's probably worth it. I'd probably do that out of the gate. But do you want to go in on like a full content program? I don't know. Like, not for a new startup? I don't know. I'd seriously question it. I would hesitate. And I know this stuff and I love this stuff. So
it takes so much work and so much time, and most business people downplay it. They don't recognize what they're getting into when they try to, oh, I'm going to take my message online. And then it's like, okay, well, you need all this content. Like, as a person that makes websites for clients, our number one battle is, where's your content? Like, where's your stuff? And they're, oh, this website doesn't have enough pizzazz and sizzle. And you're like, well, it would have more pizzazz and sizzle if you gave me some content. But then other people say, you know, you see it all the time in the forums. Someone will write, you know, SEO is dead, or there's another, you know, all these things. And it's like, well, you can't just give up. You got to do something to get your brand and your name out there. And unfortunately, a lot of people just seem to think it's paid ads if they're not leveraging a content strategy. Where do you think that really leads? Or I'd love to ask questions about AI searching too. I'm in the middle of an AI search project that got me baffled and backwards, but that's probably for another moment.
Yeah. As far as like the options other than, I don't think SEO is dead. I will say, like, all of my clients are like pretty big. Two of them are very big. And I'm excited to work on their stuff. And everything I'm seeing, I see tons of positive signals. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is, if I can keep this team on board for 3 years, we're going to do something really cool. All the signals from Google are very, very positive. Now, these are massive brands. Okay, this is like domain authority off the charts. Like, it's just crazy. But even like mid-tier brands, I'm like, oh, this is gonna be hard, right? Like, we have to show up with our A game across the board, and we are going to fight for every inch, and it's gonna be tough. So if I'm a smaller brand, or like I'm an affiliate, like what I would absolutely try to talk people out of these days, not that it's impossible, but the margin of error is so thin and small. Like, if someone's trying to build a media company around SEO entirely, like I was, that's what StonePress was. We were building sites with our partners. We were building our own stuff. I loved SEO. My co-founder, he'd been in SEO his entire career. The affiliate space, we're like, this business model is amazing. We're good at this. We love this. We love content. We think we can do better content than everybody else in the categories we are in. We believe in all that stuff. And now that whole business model is just decimated. Now there are sites out there that still have that. They do exist, and I know of a few that do quite well still. But you have to play that game absolutely perfectly. And if you make one mistake, boom, you're going instantly to zero. There's no like, you know, margin of error. And hey, if we do decently well, we'll still do okay, and we'll all have jobs. Like, not necessarily, right? Like, I had a site I was building up, last summer. And in the September 2024 update, it literally lost 90% of traffic within 24 hours. And it was an SEO focused site in the HR space. And I was investing in content. I was doing it myself. I was writing all this content myself. And I was doing all these updates and going all in on search intent and real information and doing everything for the user. I wasn't monetizing anything. I think I had 2 affiliate links on the entire site, like 300 posts. Yeah, Google's like, no, we're done. And I'm like, my content is better than anything else ranking right now. I fucking guarantee it. And it's not one of those, you know, I think I have the self-awareness to know when my content is worse or better. Like, I'm not one of those people that's like, my content's really good. And then you look at it and you're like, this content's shit. Like, I know how to help a user. I've been doing this a while. I know copy. I know content, especially if I'm writing myself. Like, I know how to do that. And I know I'm helping people. And then Google just decided it doesn't like any of it. And then the whole, just completely nuked the whole site. So it depends on, like, who's doing it, right? Where's your strategy in? Even if you're an influencer or you have your brand or whatever and you want to build up kind of your media portfolio, I would beg you to go start somewhere else. Don't start with SEO. And that pains me to say that because I love SEO. I love writing. I love the websites. I love, you know, all the analytics. I love all that stuff. But like that is all like the, and there's still a ton of ROI in SEO. It's crazy how much money is still flowing through Google. But that is now the reward for doing everything else right.
Yeah, I think
you can't go after it directly.
I think Google's between a rock and a hard place here. I think, you know, it's all around AI, and they're a big player in AI, and they were using AI to index the internet, basically, in the background. The emphasis on backlinks had been totally corrupted. They knew it. So they started to use AI as a tool as a indexing tool themselves. And then you had AI explode. And like I say, they're between a rock and a hard place because all their income comes from search. And, you know, they're one of the main investors in AI or language models, but they also despise it. Their attitude, just look at their attitude to AI generated content. They, in my opinion, they think it's just trash. Just shit, basically. If they sense that your website's using a lot of AI content, and they do a manual, you're not going to get anywhere with them. So that just shows you what that's typical Google. What they say in public and what they think in private are two totally different things. But then, now, I follow Rand Fishkin, and you got all these people saying that everybody's doing searches in utilizing AI and Google's finished. And a lot of people have seen in the WordPress space, a lot of people have seen a reduction in traffic. And I've seen a reduction, but it was really down to me pushing the envelope a bit too far. But it's gradually going back up again for me. But he's pointed out, you know, that there's been this kind of propaganda that Google's finished. But when you look at the facts, the actual search volume's gone up. But it's not pushing traffic to people's websites because they're using AI themselves to answer people's queries. But how do you make any sense? Because I'm waffling, but it seems a very turbulent, and you've got to be a bit careful about who you're listening to and how you interpret. Because there seems to be a lot of uninformed propaganda out there.
Yeah. Well, Google's full of shit, so I don't listen to anything they say. That's easy. You're the only ones.
quiet dude in there.
Yeah, Danny Sullivan, I respect a lot, but I also know I believe he believes everything he's saying, but he's trying to do the right thing. But apparently Google's a really big company. And I don't know if you all know people that work in big tech companies. I know a bunch. I can't name names. I can't name which companies. I don't know anybody at Google, but I know a number at other major tech companies. And the state of big tech right now is a shit show. It's so bad. When there was an era, almost the golden era of tech and startups, when I was coming up, like everybody that worked in tech, even big tech companies, they were here because they wanted to be here, right? And they knew what they were doing. Well, I mean, there's always idiots, but there's a lot of people that were here to do good work. You know, the pirates, the romantics that believed in actually doing something and wanted to take companies, products, launches, campaigns, whatever they're working on somewhere. Those days have changed, right? Tech became really fucking big, not just big, but fucking big. And now it's the safe career for everybody. Everybody wants a job at all the big tech companies, right? So you get all the normal people that just are here for a paycheck and don't give a shit. And the internal state of most of these companies is atrocious. It's bullshit. It's nonsense. It's just people running around with no idea what they're doing, wanting crazy stuff. And also, there's a lot of people that have been around long enough and gotten promoted high enough that they can't get fired, even though they're complete idiots. This is well known across tech, like very senior people that you see in headlines across tech companies. You'll get the internal scoop on what that person is like, and they are complete bullshitter. They have no idea what's going on. It's insane. And the entire product program.
They've gone to the right universities. They've gone to the right.
They also failed their way up, right? Like that is a thing. It happens. It happens in a minority of cases, but it takes one person to ruin an entire department, an entire program. Now, I don't know how this applies or like what degree this applies to Google, the Google search team, but I can guarantee you it's big enough. There's enough people. There's probably all sorts of internal battles and a bunch of people that have no idea what the fuck is going on.
Associate, quick question.
Yeah.
What? Can you follow the logic of this love affair with Reddit? You know,
money.
Because, you know, Reddit doesn't exist without Google's. Is it really? I've got no evidence for this, and this is just my personal opinion. It had all the sense. I shouldn't say this because Phil could get into trouble. Yeah, maybe I shouldn't say it. Basically, it did pass the sniff test to me. Their love affair with Reddit. Reddit wouldn't. Would you agree that without Google's assistant, Reddit wouldn't? But it wouldn't have been able to have gone public. It wouldn't have been, they turned. They only had to turn the dial down a little bit, and Reddit got a cold, didn't it? Or was it just? Was it just panic? Is it linked to what you were pointing out? Was it they just got into a panic state when AI appeared in the consciousness? Was it just sheer panic?
I think there's a lot of things all converging together, right? So you have AI, which shook the whole thing up, and Google's like flailing around. It's the terrified elephant in the living room, which is breaking everything, right? You also had, if anybody remembers that era, like 2021, 2022, there was a big narrative that was kind of making its way through the SEO world of like, Google's dead. If you want anything valuable, just go to Reddit. And I bet that narrative got into Google in a really big way internally. And everyone was like, we got to feature Reddit. Now, also, if you remember at that time, Reddit was actually featured pretty heavily in search results. Like before we see that like hockey stick of growth on all the Reddit search visibility curves, which is just like nothing like that has ever happened in search to that extreme. But even before then, like Reddit got a ton of traffic. It's not like Reddit was never featured. Reddit was always there on the homepage when it made sense, but it also wasn't there when it didn't make sense. And I think like before that time, Google actually put in work to figure out which Reddit threads are valuable, which ones are scammy. It wasn't this default rank for whatever you want, even if you're, it's just a bunch of affiliate spam. I've seen actually like legit like financial fraud shit and just like complete scams, not even like affiliate, like I'm going to promote a product that's shitty and make money on the back end, but like I'm going to promote fake stuff and just steal people's money. Like that stuff makes it onto the first page of Google now. Like pretty, if you know what you're doing, you can get wherever you want, right? Which is insane. And
you see, in your latest interviews, you said that, you know, there's whole landscapes that, or mythologies about how to utilize Reddit. And with this March update, I think, would you still think it's still great days for Reddit, or do you think Google's attitude to it's calming down a bit?
Well, it was Reddit. Reddit got like a small visibility ding, right? Like during the holidays or sometime in Q4. I forget the exact date, but it was coming down a little bit, and everyone's like, oh, is Google actually starting to like fix this? Is it actually like on top of it? And then, like this year, it's just been right back up. Now it's hitting new records, right? And I think Glenn Gabe, he's the one that figured out that Reddit took a ton of their content and is translating it through AI, and Google's just eating it up. Is featuring it everywhere, which you really shouldn't do that, right? Any other site doing that is going to get like hammered. Absolutely destroyed for that kind of like mass content production. Reddit gets to do it, and Google's like, yeah, give us everything you got, right? So Reddit, and I've seen this on some other sites, it's like once there are certain domains, you can get into this like almost VIP status with Google where you can do no wrong and everything.
Well, there's a particular player in the WordPress space who's notorious. They've built a grey network of interlaced websites, and it's a notorious SEO grey hatter, and most of the content's absolute shit. I mean, it's terrible effing content. But he's him and his network, he's untouched, like, you know, and it's like he's got... he's in with the in crowd with Google, even though his content's always been shit. He's untouched by Google.
You should tell. I would really like to know who it is. You don't have to tell me on this
call. Well, he's threatened to sue me if I mention his name.
Yeah, that's fine. Tell me in private email. I'd like to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, I think it's time to go for our break. It's been a fascinating discussion so far. We've got a second half that should be of equal standing. We've got a true expert about online content strategy here. I mean, a true expert. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. We've had a fantastic discussion so far. Before we go into the second half, just want to point out, if you're looking for a great WordPress hosting provider for your large projects that provides all the technology in one package and does some really great special deals with freelancers like yourself, why don't you go over to WP Tonic, wp-tonic.com. Partners, wp-tonic.com/partners. We'd love to build something special with you. Over to you, Kurt.
All right. I want to take you back to an answer that you gave us, 15 minutes ago. And you mentioned the phrase bottom of the funnel SEO. And you started to kind of explain it some, but I bet you there's people listening to this that don't even know what that means, let alone its advantages or disadvantages in relation to like a normal traditional SEO kind of focus.
Yeah, happy to. So this is a very well-known space in the affiliate industry. And these are all the really valuable keywords. Because this is where basically if you think about bottom of the funnel, it's where people, they know they have a problem, they know they want a solution, and they're just trying to figure out which product to buy, right? Like best mountain bike. Someone is aware that mountain bikes can be fun. They want a mountain bike, and now they just want to pick which one they want, right? And so if you happen to feature, you get, the best X is like the big term that everybody is aware of and everybody tries to go after, and that's where the real money is. But if you happen to rank really high for best mountain bikes, you're going to make a ton of money, so much money. And this is true across so many verticals that you can't just go after. Like if you're a brand new mountain bike company, you're not going to rank for best mountain bikes. You gotta go after smaller stuff. But for a typical startup, there's usually a niche that's really narrow that you're starting with because it's the only way to get a footing in the door before you go big. So whatever your like really, really small niche is, is there a category name for that niche that's not that competitive? Is the keyword difficulty really low? Who else is actually going after it? Is it a bunch of other small sites? That's a good sign. But it's not even just like the best X. That might be your main one that you'd like to go after. But there's generally a ton of smaller stuff, even more obscure stuff. And because it usually fragments so fast that it's difficult, even in some competitive niches, to get complete coverage on all of it, even if you're going after that category as a big player. So for a startup, there's usually some like a way in somewhere. So if you're continuing the mountain bike example, you might who's even within your like sub niche of mountain bikes, who's your like primary competitor? Right? Who is that one where you're really going toe-to-toe with? It's probably not one of the major, I don't know anything about mountain bikes, so I'm pulling all this out of my ass. But there's probably like within your sub-niche one player that you're going up against. Well, you should write a blog post on that competitor review, right? People are going to go look. They want to know, is that competitor legit? They're going to look for reviews. Why don't you write a review on your primary competitor, put a blog post going after that review topic. You could also do alternatives with your brand versus your primary competitor. There's usually one primary competitor and then a few more that are like somewhat adjacent. Do that across your whole little sub niche. If you've picked a good like niche to start with that's properly narrow, there's even for a brand new site with a very minimal brand, you can probably get some traction just by mapping out all those individual topics. You have versus topics, you have alternatives topics, you have name review topics, you have usually your category, your best X. There might be some sub categories that you can go after. Now you're talking 20, 30 blog posts pretty fast. And even some like basic, like non-complicated blog posts can still do well going after those terms. Now, if you're trying to like, oh, I'm going to go be like going after best web hosting and I'm going to launch a new web host product from the ground up and I'm going to go head to head with, Bluehost and HostGator and GoDaddy. I'm like, this isn't going to work. You're not going to be able to write GoDaddy review. Like that's going to be tough for like GoDaddy versus Bluehost. That's also, I've gone after all these terms. This is like big leagues type stuff, right? So you got to, hopefully you're in an industry that doesn't know about SEO that much. That helps. Hopefully you've picked a niche that's narrow enough to give you a foot in. But that stuff can be worth the time. Because even if it doesn't matter, I'll say there's a few things that still make that valuable. One is even with all the AIO and LLM bullshit. When someone's truly looking at a product decision, especially like a somewhat expensive product decision, they are going to do their homework, or at least a lot of people are. They're going to start with ChatGPT, and then they're going to dig in, and they're going to look for more reviews, and they're going to look for alternatives, and they're going to want to read more blog posts. That's all an opportunity to get in front of users through that like research journey. So, you know, the AIOs are not going to lock you out necessarily. There's still value in it. The other thing is, even if traffic's like kind of collapsing across the internet, at least Google, you only need a couple visitors on any of these posts for it to be valuable, right? If a post delivers you a handful of customers a year, it's paid for itself. If it delivers you 12 customers a year, like, you're in the green by a lot. Now multiply that by 20, 30. Hell yeah. Like, that is a consistent, small, but a consistent flow of customers. And then as your brand gets bigger, you can decide, okay, are we going to go after sort of the mid-tier stuff? Are we going to kind of like try to level up in Google and go after some bigger people? And then maybe you get really big and you can go after like the primary product category in your space. But that's stuff to kind of approach as you keep growing. Right. Anyway.
Yeah. And just to kind of explore something, I don't want to take too much time on this topic, but we have discussed on the show the idea of having a niche like extensively. And I think people really get lost on the whole because they think they're taking away their sales opportunities instead of focusing on what's there. So you mentioned mountain biking, which is my passion. So yeah, coincidentally, so we could say aluminum framed, carbon fiber frame, dual suspension, front suspension.
Oh, great. Yeah.
You know, 27-inch tires, 29-inch tires, the width of the handlebars, cross-country or downhill. And so there's all those subcategories. At what point does someone run the risk of niching down too far? Is that even a possibility?
If there's search traffic, I would say like any search traffic around your niche, or like the your one-to-one competitor, you haven't niched down too much.
Perfect.
And honestly, you could also say, now this takes a lot of judgment and a lot of luck too, but like the real play from like a marketing strategy point of view is to create a new niche, right? Like if I'm creating a mountain bike company, how can I do something that the mountain bike community has not heard before? How can I create, you know, basically WP Engine did this with WordPress. You know, before it was just web hosting. Everybody had cPanel and you installed WordPress and that was it. And WP Engine came along and goes, no, we're going to do WordPress hosting. Completely custom. They basically, and now they kind of like own that sub niche, right? We're smart.
Well, I'm competing in the hosting niche, but we're a boutique. I use the word, we're a boutique hosting provider in a particular sector. I use this strategy. I use bottom of the funnel with a bit of Brian Dean thrown in, a little bit of Skyscraper thrown in as well into the concoction. And I just try and give Google a load of signals by using video and podcasting. I try and give Google that I'm a legit player in the space. I produce a ton of video. I put video on all my written content, and I do a ton of podcasting to build links and credibility. And I think hopefully that gives some signals to Google that I'm a legit player in the niche that I'm playing at. And I mix it all up, you know, and try and give. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't work. Like, you know, I can't predict which posts get some traction. I'm always surprised which ones do and which ones. I choose some that I think are going to do really well with Google and they don't. So it's quite interesting, really, isn't it?
Yeah. You kind of have to do everything these days.
But what do you reckon of what I've just outlined? Do you think that's a reasonable strategy, trying to give the right signals to Google?
Yeah. So for anybody, I wouldn't try to do a pure SEO play at all anymore, even for like, you know, if you're a startup or you got your own company and you're trying to do some of this bottom of the funnel stuff. Don't treat it as like an ongoing program, just treat it as like a project. And then with like a little ongoing maintenance, at least to start, and then go spend a lot of time in some other channel. And if, this is another thing that pains me to say this, And this in a way, this detracts from Google. This makes Google worse. I'm trying to convince people to not invest in Google content for Google because the ROI is so tricky, unless you're like a huge company. But like, go spend time on, I mean, you don't have that many options these days, right? You have the podcast.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn. Gets real short after that, right? So pick whichever one resonates with you. It needs to be some sort of top of the funnel, social-ish channel. YouTube sort of splits the divide a little bit. And make sure that you have a really serious content program going on at least one other channel. And invest in that probably for a long time and put more effort in that than SEO, right? Really pick your battles with SEO instead of going like all in like I used to do, and it used to work really well. Again, unless, you know, if you're Mr. Beast and if you're on Mr. Beast's team and he's like, okay, we're going to move into SEO, I'd be like, yeah.
Oh, well, I am. I'm Mr. Beast.
None of us are Mr. Beast. But like, you know, say if you've won the game in your other channel and you want to go do SEO, I'll be like, okay, this is going to be just fine. But if you're just starting, go build YouTube. Go build LinkedIn.
That's me all over. Like, I'm Mr. Beast of WordPress. So I think we're going to drop the next question. We're going over the last question because you're a busy guy and you got a hard stop. So if you had a time machine, like HD Wells, and you could go back to the beginning of your career and just give you a quick 5-10 minute little chat with yourself, is there any kind of little insight you would have told yourself that you wish you knew then that you know now?
Yeah.
And the only thing you can't do is say not come on this show.
Yeah. In 15 years. I'd say two things. One personal, one career related. The personal one, I would say, like, well, in my 20s, I was like extremely frugal, like way too frugal. You know, I was living with my girlfriend, my partners, we're still together. And I think, you know, we moved into our own place. And I think it took us like 2 years to get like a couch, and we didn't even get like a full size couch. We just got like a tiny little love seat because I was like worried about the price. For like the first year and a half, like the living room was just my desk, and I was just working all the time. That's all I was doing. And I'd be like, Lars, you can spend a little bit of money. It's okay. You can go buy a couch. Okay, you can go like go to Italy or something. I don't know, man. Just like it's gonna be fine. Don't be so paranoid about the finances. That's a me thing. But as far as the professional side, I'd be like, Lars, you really like SEO. You really like blogs. There's a lot of money in this space, and I know you're doing the career thing, working in other companies, but honestly, this window has a timeline on it. It's going to get different, and that window is going to shut. If you want to go build something, build it fucking now. Don't go work at that next job. Like, fucking go for it. And that probably will worked out very, very well for me. I mean, it still worked out. I have nothing to complain about, and I would say the same thing to like move it forward to someone that might be, you know, earlier in their career. Like if you are super passionate about, you know, YouTube is still hot, podcasts are still hot, TikTok, like if you know those games and you just feel it in your bones, go fucking do it. Do it now. Cause the platforms are going to change. Platforms are going to come and go. Right. There was an era where you could have, you could build all sorts of crazy shit on Twitter. That's fucking gone. Okay. Like that's that. who had that in their fortune cookie, right? That's insane. And I don't know what's going to happen to YouTube, but it's probably not going to be good. At some point, it's going to go sideways. How? I don't know, but it will. And same thing with all these other platforms. So if you're a little early with like the big wave that's coming and you just get that media environment, go build the fucking thing and take advantage of it now. Cause I always assumed I'd have more time, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go work on this other thing I'm really interested in, and then I'll get around to this. And then by the time I finally truly got around to it, oh, door shut. Okay. So
we've got about 5 minutes before we wrap it up. So I'm really big on YouTube, and I must have over this year uploaded over 600 videos to YouTube. And it's really paid some dividends. And my YouTube channel's grown quite rapidly, but it's been a lot of hard work. But I'm still very, and we've got the master of LinkedIn as my co-host. He's actually written a course about LinkedIn and using it for your business to business. He's actually written a course on it. And I do post a lot of content to LinkedIn, but it's aimed more at the bigger clientele, and hopefully it will pay off. But I'm really big on YouTube, and I've invested a lot of time. What's your own thoughts about YouTube?
Yeah, I think YouTube is still hot. I think it's still, the ROI is definitely there. New stuff is popping off all the time. You could create something from nothing. I'm definitely not an expert by any means, but like at a high level, the platform feels healthy to me from what I see and just interacting at it, with it as a user. Like it feels vibrant, it feels active, and the rewards are there, right? Like, yes, everyone hates the recommendation algorithm at creators, users. There's always things to bitch about. People always bitch about Google, always, right? That's always there. But like from a bird's eye view, like it does feel like it's healthy as a whole, right? It's never perfect, but like fundamentally it works. You put in the time, you put in the effort, you try really hard, you iterate, you have the self-awareness to keep tweaking until you get that polish, right? Some people don't have that and it'll never work for them, and that sucks. But like if you work through it and get through that learning curve, the payoff's there, at least it seems to me.
What's your thoughts about email marketing?
Oh, email's great. I love email. So email's changed a little bit simply because like people don't reply to emails like they used to. I could get like crazy inbox conversations going from email, 10, 15 years ago. Now, like people just don't reply. Even if you have a super engaging email list, people just, so it's become a more passive channel, but it's still great. People read that shit. The main thing, I'm hesitant. I'm very cautious about this one, although it's working for a lot of people right now. If you get into like, Kit or Beehive or Substack or any of these things, there's also that recommended kind of algorithm on sign up where you like everybody's seeding each other's email lists. It reminds me of like the catalog co-ops. I don't know if everybody's familiar with that history, but basically, the catalog industry came together. Everybody in like the home furnishing industry would come together and dump all of their buyers into a single database and then just rent the buyers from each other. Someone can probably go into more detail on how this works, but that worked great for a while, and then it just destroyed the entire industry. Because the teams got lazy. All the same buyers got recirculated over and over and over again. And, catalogs are suffering for a lot of other reasons, but this didn't help at all, right?
So, yeah, well, thanks for that. And lastly, what's your thoughts? Because I'm pushing it because you've got to be off in a couple minutes, but what's your thoughts about LinkedIn? Because like I say, I've got the master here, Kirk. That seems to me, that seems a strange platform. That's a real,
it's odd. There's definitely odd things about it, but it's another platform. Like we could complain about details and this and that, but again, from a high level, LinkedIn seems healthy to me, right? Like if I put a lot of effort into LinkedIn, good things come out of it. And yes, everyone's doing the woe is me, I'm my worst boss, blah, blah, blah. Here's my morning routine, say this stupid catchphrase in the comments and I'll give you this PDF that I had AI write, it's like all this junk. But like if you put in the effort, it's another thing that you can get business out of LinkedIn. And yeah, you got to deal with the algorithm. Yeah, you got to build it over time. Yes, you have to iterate. Yes, you got to get through the learning curve. Yes, you have to be able to say something that's interesting, which a lot of people cannot do, and that sucks. But fundamentally, I do think the platform works. I went really hard on LinkedIn last fall, and I was like, this is great. it's top of funnel stuff, but you can get somewhere with it. Like if I was building a B2B SaaS startup, I'd be on LinkedIn like twice a day, every day. I'd be going so hard on it, and I'd be like, this is my top of funnel content channel. And sooner or later, LinkedIn will probably do something stupid that breaks the core you know, not just make it annoying, but like breaks the thing. Google, not only did they make it annoying over a number of years, but then they just fundamentally broke it. And I don't think they understand why or how they broke it. These other,
all right, you gotta be off in a couple minutes. So what's the best way that people can find out more about your knowledge? Because you've been a great guest, and hopefully later on in the year you agree to come back on the show. You've been a great guest. So what's the best way for people to find out more about you and what you know? Because you've been very generous with your knowledge.
Yeah, the first, since we're talking about it, go connect with me on LinkedIn. Just mention the show and I'll automatically respond or accept the connection. And then if you want to go a little deeper than that, LarsLofgren.com, that's my blog. I blog very occasionally, but when I do blog, I try to go hard. And then there's an email list there as well if you want to make sure you don't miss out on any updates. So email list at LarsLofgren.com or hit me up on LinkedIn.
That's fantastic. And Kirk, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and what you're up to, Kirk?
Well, they're already on LinkedIn looking up Lars Lofgren. So look up Kurt Von Onen. I'm the only Kurt Von Onen on LinkedIn. If you found me, you found me. And we'll make the connection and go from there.
And I want to point out, I post a ton of stuff on LinkedIn. I've been doing it for over a year. I don't know how many videos and stuff I've got on LinkedIn, but it must be substantial. But if you really want to support the show, just share it with your friends and colleagues. The show's growing. I think the influence of the show is also growing. We get some amazing guests. We've just shown it. We will be back next week with another great interview. We'll see you soon, folks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.